another week and we got to do it again. I mean, some
shit just never changes, man. It's never over.
Yeah, I guess not. I don't know. Either way, we got to update the intro, give them the right info.
Do you have any ideas?
I was just going to shoot it straight. Just tell them what's up.
Okay.
Oh, I have to. Okay.
No, let's hear it.
Okay, babe. What's going on, Titans? Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. In today's episode, we're going to be breaking down volume 118, issue number 5 of the Daily Titan student newspaper. In this episode, we're going to be going over a couple of stories, including one about the recent Beyond the Conversation that happened on campus with John M. Chu. We're also going to be talking about the convocation that also occurred last week. And then we're also going to be going over an opinion about the politicization of science. And we're also going to wrap it up with some talk about recent sports events.
Sounds great to me.
Stay tuned, Titans. We'll get into it. And before I forget, I'm one of your co-hosts, Kabir Kansar, your layout editor, and I'm joined with
your other co-host, Damiana Gabriel, news assistant editor. And for this week's top story, our staff writer, Leah Kornberg, covered the most recent visitor to Beyond the Conversation, John M. Chu.
Director of a lot of things. I mean, Wicked, Crazy Rich Asians, he has a pretty solid body of work. So it was really cool to hear him come on campus and like speak about how his like upbringing really played a role in that.
I agree. I thought it was especially interesting because he talked a lot about how he has been into film and film has been something that has been like special to him for a while, like since his childhood. And I thought it was especially cool how that was like an interest that his parents fostered. He talked about how when he first like expressed that interest for film, his parents bought him his own camera so that he could kind of like practice with filming.
Yeah, I think one of my like favorite takeaways from this article was sort of like towards the end where he spoke about like following curiosity instead of just passion or talent.
Yeah.
Because he framed it in a way that really spoke to the value that curiosity has in terms of leading you to growth. And I think one of the things he said was along the lines of how, like, while you could follow what you're good at, follow what sort of makes you curious, follow what you want to know more about. And that seems like a very real parallel that was a part of his journey with film, with him just being interested in film and then getting more technology to sort of pursue that. It was really cool to hear him speak about how it wasn't just something he was naturally gifted at or naturally skilled at. It was something that he wanted to get better at through the lens of just curiosity, of wanting to know more about the industry and know more about how to be better at what he wants to do.
I agree. I think that something else that was interesting that he brought up was his upbringing. I know he's from California. He is from the Bay Area. And I think that that kind of colored his upbringing a lot.
Definitely. I think it's like, the Bay Area as a whole is a place where a lot of stuff kind of happens. And I think growing up in a place with such a high pace, mm-hmm. especially in like the 80s and 90s, you know, Silicon Valley is growing. Yeah. The Bay Area as a whole is kind of just expanding and growing. So to be born into a place where there's always so much going on, it really speaks to the sort of like the different forms that influence can take in your life, whether it's like people coming into his parents' restaurant and dropping off different film equipment or connections he made outside of that and like high school friends and things like that. So I think that like, what you're saying about his upbringing playing like a very colorful role in the work he does now, I think it's very present.
Yeah, he discussed that on the panel too, in the context of his recently released memoir, which is called Viewfinder, a memoir of seeing and being seen.
Killer title too.
I know. I'm a fan personally. But I think one of the more important points that he discussed like in the context of his memoir was navigating his cultural disconnect. And I think that's something that's pertinent to a lot of students, just a lot of people in general, just like as the son of immigrant parents, he was like second generation. It gives you like a different perspective and coloring on life to kind of try and balance that culture that you're getting from your parents, as well as growing up like in a country that's different from theirs.
Definitely. And I think it's because you have to sort of find your place with that. You can't necessarily rely on like those that came before you to inform you the culture you're from because you're in a different environment. But at the same time, you can't necessarily always fully dive into the culture that you're now a part of because of where you come from and because you have a different upbringing and a different home life and things like that. So sort of like what you said, balancing the two of them and finding out how they mesh in order to create a vision of what you want your life to be or the sort of life you want to portray. It's a different struggle, I think.
I agree. And I think you can see that struggle in some of his works. I know in Crazy Rich Asians, which is one of his directed films, one of his most popular films, it kind of touched on that, and a lot of people who are fans of that movie kind of enjoyed it for the fact that it showed representation that kind of is not that regularly seen in movies.
Absolutely.
Especially like romance movies.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that overall he just led a very good conversation about the different ways that your upbringing and the things that you're curious about can lead you into growth. But I do have a question for you. If you had to write a memoir,
yeah,
what would you want to call it?
Oh, that's a good one. You know what? I think I'd probably just title it My Name.
Just, really?
Yeah.
Wow. But then, so it would just be Demiana Gabrielle, Demiana Gabrielle, like, title
yeah.
and author?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then a huge picture of me in
the book.
Where necessary. I'm mobbing, like, really bad.
Well, you have to, yeah.
What about you?
I think I'll just call it The Things That Happened and the Rest of the Things That Didn't.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. There'll be, like, 4 chapters just dedicated to, like, missed opportunities.
Okay. Yeah. You better get on writing that.
Oh, it's already been written.
Oh. Well, has it been published, though?
No, we're waiting on that one.
Right.
I'm still adding to my list of things that haven't happened yet.
Okay. Well, I'm beating you to it.
So. Okay. Well, damn.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately, though, we're going to move on now.
Okay.
Sweet. I heard a rumor.
What did you hear?
I heard there was a major gathering of campus leaders and other important people on campus.
Would this happen to be the convocation?
It would be. But what if I told you one of those important people is in the room with us right now?
I don't think I would believe you.
Really? But what if it is our own very news editor, Michelle King?
Well, that changes things. I would, in fact, believe you.
Wow.
And what makes you believe that?
I think you're a very trustworthy person, Miss News Editor of all time.
I try.
Yeah. So, you were at convocation.
I sure was.
What'd you learn?
I learned very much.
Please enlighten us.
President Rishon talked a lot about his plans with Fullerton Ford, which he also talked about last year at convocation. It's just kind of the strategic plan for Cal State Fullerton for the next 5 years as of last year, so 2024 to 2029. Just kind of the steps that he would like to see the university take.
Did he have any updates on, like, the progress of fulfilling those steps or anything?
Yeah, there were 4 kind of goals that he set in motion for this year. Kind of talking about the 4 goals were putting students at the center of everything going on campus, making sure that students are being catered to. Second goal was enrollment. We have a really high enrollment. We're the largest CSU campus right now based on enrollment. The third goal was about, like, growth on campus. We have a lot of new buildings being built this semester, housing, and a lot of places for students to convene, do work, learn. And then the final goal was fostering a culture of care and belonging, which he really emphasized throughout the whole convocation. Those are kind of his goals for the university for this next year.
Yeah. In reading the article, I saw he also mentioned a couple of things about, like, the current political climate that we're facing. What were his comments on that?
Yeah. So he really emphasized a lot that there's obviously a lot of turmoil going on in the U.S. politically and just among people. And he wants campus to kind of band together and create a community in this time.
He talked a lot about pulling the cord, like, so, sort of supporting other students and kind of keeping a lookout.
Yeah. So he wants everyone to, you know, it's not just up to campus leaders to point out when something is going wrong or if a student is in trouble or there's an emergency going on. It's not just him or it's not just his cabinet, but all of us are responsible as a community to kind of look out for one another. And he really emphasized that right now, especially with a lot of just interesting things happening and a lot of uncertainty, just to look out for one another.
Were there any other major takeaways from him or other speakers at convocation?
Yeah, so Academic Senate Chair Matthew Jarvis also spoke. He kind of led in the convocation, and he talked about kind of similar things to Rishon as well, of just political climate and just the community being pretty, like, the word that he used was hostile. That there's just a lot going on, very fragile environment going on right now, and that we just, together, we can kind of work through it. It doesn't, you know, we can't do it individually, we can't all make things work by ourselves, but as a community, we can all kind of band together. So that was kind of the general message of all of the speakers, was that as a campus community, the best bet during this time of a lot of change going on is to kind of work through it together.
So who else spoke at convocation?
Provost Amir Dabirian spoke, like I said before, Academic Senate Chair Matthew Jarvis, and also the ASI President Hanifa Sayed all spoke before Rishon came out, kind of all echoed a very similar statement as to what I've been saying.
Did Hanifa Sayed speak anything about, like, ASI and what's happening with them or, like, wellness initiative stuff?
Yeah, she talked a little bit about the Wellness Initiative and just how that will also kind of play into joining our community together, in that we are all looking out for, like, best interests of each other. And, yeah, I mean, that was a big thing that happened in Rashaan's first year as president, was him signing the ASI Wellness Initiative into action after it had been delayed for 3 years. So that's a pretty big step for ASI right now. Yeah, so she talked a little bit about that.
Okay, pivoting, like, back towards the Fullerton Forward Plan, I know that your article kind of talked a little bit more specifically about some of the aspects of the plan that were being implemented or, I guess, fulfilled this semester, like the creation of some new positions and, like, the specific new construction that's being undergone on our campus. Mm-hmm. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it was actually Amir Dabirian talked about some new developments within, within the deans of colleges. They're beginning a search for two new deans, one for the College of Engineering and Computer Science and one for the College of Communications. And there are just generally, like, ongoing searches for a lot of higher-up positions right now. I believe there's three VP searches going on. He was also talking about the new buildings that you had mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's Landmark Hall and Sequoia Housing as well, and the Innovation Hub.
And as somebody who was covering this convocation, mm-hmm. were there any notable moments that you maybe didn't get a chance to share in your article that stuck out to you?
There was. This is entirely unrelated to anything important that happened at convocation. However, Ronald Rashaan opened his speech to let us know that him and Provost Amir Dabirian were, when they were backstage, Dabirian is from Iran,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about a traditional kind of, like, greeting that they do there, which is just a little, like, kiss on the cheek. And they were practicing this backstage. However, they both severely misjudged and ended up...
Oh, I see.
Kiss right. on the lips. Just backstage. But Rashaan revealed this information to us, so I can speak it aloud. And I would just like to continue to inform, because I thought that was really sweet of them. It's just, it furthers the community, you know?
Love to see admin getting along.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, well, I think that was kind of a really beautiful end to kind of one of our bigger fall semester events. Thank you for coming and speaking about it.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy for you to be here.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Man. Furthermore, thank you.
Oh.
Wow.
This is just,
Yeah.
Yeah. Well then.
Farewell.
If there's nothing more to say, I guess you can be on your way.
I will.
All right then. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
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 Hey Titans, this is Sergio Gonzalez, the digital managing editor of The Daily Titan. Stay connected and follow us at The Daily Titan on social media. Be sure to pick up a paper on campus in the Orange newsstands, and if you want more stories, check us out online. See you next week.
Someone had a lot to say this week.
I did.
Oh, I didn't say it was you.
Oh, well, it was me.
Oh, well, you want to tell me what you had to say?
Yeah, I wrote my first opinion.
And how was that?
It was really fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah? What did you talk about?
Well, my opinion was about how I don't think that scientific findings should be politicized.
Any examples on mine?
Two examples specifically from my article were, first of all, the kind of Trump administration's generals efforts to kind of devalue climate change findings in order to push a specific agenda and kind of bring America back to non-renewable energy sources. And in order to do that, there's been a lot of overturning of climate change research, a lot of defunding of groups that study climate change, like a call to change the standards of things like methane emissions and like carbon emissions that are acceptable for certain industries. And I honestly think that these are findings that have been well established for decades.
Yeah.
Decades. And to kind of turn it into a right versus left issue
kind of devalues the credibility.
Absolutely. I'm one of the major takeaways I found in your article that really that I really appreciated reading or sort of seeing implied there was the sort of divisiveness this leads to between people, especially making issues like climate change or things that are very cut and dry in terms of a research perspective into left and right, sort of like, oh, if you don't agree with me, you're wrong, but if you agree with me, like,
then
your facts are real.
I think that there should be a distinction also between debating political perspectives that are a little bit more subjective and claiming that scientific findings are on the same level as perspectives that are more subjective, because again, these are things that have been peer-reviewed. Like, they go through crazy processes to showcase and like provide proof that they are credible and facts. And I just think that this like perspective that like facts, things that are proven and empirical, are up for debate kind of spreads that misinformation. It contributes a lot to anti-intellectualism.
Definitely. And anti-intellectualism is something that we've kind of covered a lot recently at DT other opinions that have come up and also just other conversations that have been spurred on in the newsroom. And I think that this whole can of worms that this article sort of opens up about the divisiveness of scientific issues, not only does it sort of devalue the research in itself, it also insults the industries that perfect this research and that really actively look to seek out this research and give people the answers that they want to know.
Exactly, because it doesn't just contribute to polarization, further dividing people who kind of have more right-leaning perspectives or more left-leaning perspectives. It also just kind of makes the assumption that people who are doing scientific research have ulterior motives.
Right. And I think your mentions of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in later on in your article really highlight this point as well about turning these scientific issues into political polarizations.
Yeah, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is currently the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, is, I think, a great example of people kind of trying to discredit scientific findings in order to spread an agenda or kind of calling into question things that are founded in decades of research. One of the points specifically that I brought up was his claims that vaccines cause autism in children, or that vaccination in general is kind of like a personal choice, which I think just calls into question the credibility of vaccines. And I talked specifically about kind of the effect that this has had on real life people.
Yeah, I think your reporting on like the increase in measles cases over the past couple of years was really really exemplifying of this claim.
It's an arguably like exponential rise in measles cases. I looked at the past 2 years of reported measles cases, and in 2023 there were only 59 cases reported of measles and no deaths. And then in 2024, that took an already kind of big jump into 285 cases, still no deaths. And then as of September 10th, there have been 1,454 reported cases of measles and 3 deaths. I think that this rise in measles, it's been exponential. And I think that there's a direct correlation between spreading rhetoric about the questioned infallibility of vaccines and the rise in cases, because when people who are in these positions of authority are spreading this information, the people who they're leading kind of tend to put their trust in them and follow them.
Yeah, and I think this noticeable trend in the way rhetoric has spread and also the way diseases have spread really points back to the point that you really made with this article, which is that people need to sort of take it into their own hands to fact check the information and really figure out what they believe based on what they know, rather than going based on what the people in power, people with positions of inherent credibility, are saying.
I 100% agree. That was kind of the point of my article. I just think in a time when there is an overabundance of information, it's crucial to inspect where your information is coming from, no matter the source. I think especially when it comes to people in those positions of power, it's kind of important to consider their motives, because I don't think it's crazy to say that politicians have their own motives in spreading the ideas or rhetoric that they do. And I just think that conflating, again, politics with science, it just kind of doesn't contribute to a constructive discussion about scientific progress.
I think it kind of just leaves us stagnant as a society, because it's not that people aren't, like, willing to learn about science. I think it's just that people get sucked into these debates, and I think once there is somebody in that, like, position of authority that claims that this perspective is against what I believe in, if you're following them, you kind of tend to get, like, sucked down that pipeline, if that makes sense.
Definitely, yeah. All right. I think it's high time we just dive into sports and find out what's happening.
What is happening?
I wouldn't know, but you know who would?
Who?
Nick Wire, our sports editor at the Daily Titan.
Oh,
and I heard he got some updates for us about men's water polo.
This is crazy. Welcome.
Feels so good to be back.
Yeah.
First time this semester. Let's go.
Let's go. So tell me a little bit about what's happening in the pool.
Well, they played two games this weekend at the Fullerton Mini Tournament. Won both of them. But to be realistic, the two teams that they played, Fresno Pacific University and Cal Lutheran, they're D2 and D3 teams. So we should note that. But also, on our side, we scored a combined 37 goals in two games. Which,
not too shabby.
Not too shabby. I would say that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And just being there at the first game, the Fresno Pacific game, we were much faster than Fresno Pacific, causing turnovers, going on the breakaway. It was something I haven't seen from Fullerton water polo. It was cool to see.
Just like a level of intensity that hasn't been shown before? Or?
Yeah, and a big reason is they play the D1 teams, Air Force, Harvard. These are like the higher level D1 teams. Brown University is one of them too. And they don't have the same amount of burst.
Mm. Do you think that playing against these sort of lower division teams sort of gave them that spark after last weekend where they kind of split their games?
Yeah, definitely. And it was nice to see them win a couple games. Not that they're necessarily bad. They don't have a bad record. But this is kind of a spark that they definitely need.
Definitely.
And it's interesting, too. Their coach at the beginning of the year in our preview, he said that that he was intentionally scheduling harder games, right? He wasn't just going to schedule wins. That's what he said. He's not just going to schedule wins.
It's got to be earned.
Mm-hmm. And he really believes in this team. They have a couple graduate seniors, or students, graduate students, and they've returned a lot of their players, and some of the transfers that they got are already contributing. Andrew Barnuevo is one of them. And so, yeah, there's a lot of hype, I would say, around this team. This team is veteran-led, and I'm excited to see how they do in conference.
Definitely. And then coming up, what's next for them?
Next up, they are playing at the Cal Baptist tournament, and they play against Austin College on Friday. So they have another tournament coming up, and then shortly after, they'll go into Big West.
Definitely. With them playing against Austin College at Cal Baptist, what sort of division are they looking at in terms of, like, their opponent?
I would say I would expect Cal State Fullerton to score a lot more goals. This is another lower-level team. So, you know, kind of expect the same thing from this weekend. But of course, it's a road tournament. It's a different pool.
Definitely.
Different atmosphere.
None of that home pool advantage.
Yeah, so... But we can expect a team that will score a lot, will be more aggressive, trying to get steals, and hope for the best.
Definitely. Always hope for the best.
I think this is all great. I'm actually really excited to see how the rest of the season unfolds. How do you think? How are you feeling compared to, like, other seasons?
So I'm going to say we still have not beaten a ranked team. Most of the Big West and most of California is ranked. That's just the state of California water polo. It's very, very strong competition. And we've had a couple of close games, but we've not lived up to beating those teams. I can see maybe stealing one or two wins, but we have to see it for me to believe it. So
absolutely.
They haven't done it yet. So
I'm going to look forward to another box to check off soon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. Well, I think you've checked the box of being our sports correspondent for the night, so let's go. Want to go ahead and head up on out of here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming. And that's it for this week's episode of DT Pod. Be sure to pick up a copy of the Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned in today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and as always, if you like us, We love you.
All right, don't go anywhere just yet, Titans, because you know we got to give a couple thanks before we head on out of here. So first of all, we got to start off with a special thank you to our executive producer, Sergio Gonzalez and Jaden Lovelady. We also got to throw another thank you out to our producer, Michelle King. Some more thank yous are going out additionally to our assistant producers, Giselle Medina and Raniel Santos. And we also got to give a big old thank you to Bijan Sucharisade for providing the music in this episode. Most importantly, we got to thank all of you guys for listening and staying tapped in with Daily Titan. Just make sure you pick up a copy of that paper and check us out online. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you.